You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 478. Let's go, baby. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. I'm here with Contributing Editor Adam White. I had an annoying week with lots of scuffles, truffles, and duffles. I believe you did too. Is that correct?
Allow me to open my frustration beer right now because I like doing this into the mic. Oh, God, this week sucks.
Good sound effect.
I mean, this is the only good Foley that I can do. It's only because it's a real can, so it's not Foley, I guess. It's the actual noise. I don't know. Is it just this year sucks so far, this decade? Like, I don't know what this portends to, but...
No way, man. Oh. 2020 rules.
Yeah, listen, that's reviews writer interviewer Tom Trauma. Adam, I heard Tom Trauma's podcast. You know what Tom Trauma's podcast is, Adam? It's Tom complaining about punk news for an hour and a half with Neil.
Oh, that's not true.
Yeah, yes, it is. I listened to episode 11 with Tricky Ricky, or episode 10 with Tricky Ricky, and all that is you and Liverpool Neil says, well, punk news doesn't cover punk. John likes hip-hop. John likes reggae. I'm sorry that everything can sound like The Clash, Tom.
It's punknews.org, John.
Anyway, this
well, you know, the irony of it, John, here's the real irony of the situation. It's like, we're going to do this thing, and we're just going to talk about punk, and you know what we do most of the time is sit around and talk about what posers we are. So, you know, last laugh, you get the last laugh.
Fair enough. Well, he who last laugh, laughs hardest, as it were. Anyways, listen, so this is Punk News Pop. I'm just going to run down a couple of quick frustrations real quick. Yeah, at the beginning of the year, I was like, yeah, more shows. I can't wait to throw more shows. I'm having second thoughts already. So a band that Adam and Tom know that we're not going to mention on the podcast because I still like them, but they reached out to me. They say, John, we had a show fall through in Philadelphia. Can you give us some venues? I was like, oh, here's some venues, but if you need some help, let me know. And they were like, oh, okay, can you give us the contact for some venues? And I was like, here's the contact, but if you need some help, let me know. And then they said, thanks. I'm like, all right, well, I guess they don't want any help. Then the next day, they get back to me. They're like, oh, John, can you give us contact venue for venue X? I was like, here's the contact for venue X, but I throw show there's a lot. So if you want some help, let me know. And they're like, yeah, can you book it for us? So I said, yeah. And I did some last minute magic, and I had it booked within 2 hours. And so I said to them, yo, guess what? The show is booked. We're ready to rock. This is going to kick ass. And they're like, wow, thanks. Then 2 hours later, they're like, oh, we actually might go somewhere else. Do you know anything about this other venue? And I'm like, well, I kind of already booked a show. They're like, yeah, but we kind of want to do it at this other place. Can you book it there? And honestly, like at that point, like the wind just was taken out of my wings, and they weren't being bad guys, and it's not their fault, you know. But if they don't want to do it, then I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to convince them to do it. And so I kind of fudged. I mean, I could have flaked out the one venue and went to the other venue, but I didn't want to do that. So I said to them, listen, if I tell this venue it's canceled and I'm at another venue, it looks like I'm double dealing, which I don't want to. You know, ruin my relationship. So if you guys want to go to the other venue, that's totally fine. And I'll step back because I'm looking to help. I don't want to come up to work. So if I'm not helping, no problem. I'll step back. And they're like, oh, we'll get back to you. I said, no problem. So at that point, I want them to go to with someone else. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do it because if they don't want to do it, like, how, you know, in a style that I know how to do it and can make it successful, then I don't want to force them into that mold.
And you've pretty much had enough of them at this point where you're just ready to be done.
I wasn't mad at them, but I was annoyed, you know. And the only reason I was annoyed is because they said I gave them plenty of chances.
Annoyed is a euphemism for mad, John.
No, it's not. It really isn't. I was annoyed because I gave them plenty of chances to back out, and I gave them plenty of chances to say, say no. And I gave them plenty of chance to say, you can book it directly if you want, but if you want me to do it, I'm happy to do it. And they said, would you please do it? And then I made some magic happen. And then they had, you know, so after we agreed, then they changed their mind. You know, before we agreed to change their mind, that'd be fine. You know, so I was annoyed. So they get back to me and they're like, oh, well, can you throw it at this other venue? And I said, well, no, I don't want to do it there, but you should feel free to go there and do it there. And that's fine. And I'll even hand out flyers for you, you know. And they're like, because promoter XYZ wants to do it. I said, that's fine. Promoter XYZ, I know promoter XYZ. That person is a good person. I know them. You should go with them. They're good. And then I reached out to XYZ because I honestly, like, I didn't want to get caught up in a battle. I mean, I'm not going to fight, you know, I'm not going to fight over a band. You know what I mean? I'm just beyond that. You know, like, not worth my time, you know? So I reached out to promoter XYZ and I said, yo, listen, this band is trying to book through me and I think they're trying to book through you and I think they want to go with you. And I just want to let you know that I want you to do it. I don't want to do it. I want you to do it. I don't want you to think that I'm battling with you over this because I want you to have it. And the other person was like, okay, that's cool. Thanks for reaching out. But the issue, and I am somewhat paranoid, but my paranoia tends to be right, is I suspect that there are – and Philadelphia, unfortunately, is somewhat fragmented and somewhat of a backbiting scene in that I feel as though there are certain segments of the Philly punk scene that are anti-John events. And I know some are because, you know, some have tried to do some lame stuff, which is so not fun. Like when people try to, like, you know – throw things off the track or whatever. So I don't know if this person is being legit with me or not, but I'm being honest in that, like, if they want to do it, they could do it, you know? And so I said to them, so if you want to do it, that's fine. They said that you want to do it. So if you want to do it, I want you to do it. But then this other promoter said to me, well, I don't want to do it, but they asked me if I would do it. I don't really want to do it, but I might if I have to or something. I'm like, well, they're not even giving me a straight story, you know? So anyway, I kind of pulled back and I waited to hear back from them. And eventually they went with some other promoter that I've never even heard of. And honestly, like, they were polite to, like, oh, we're really sorry, but we want to go with this guy because, you know, he's got a later curfew. And I said, no problem, no problem at all. So I got to flake out on my venue where I made the magic happen, which is not that big. I mean, it's not cool, but it's not that big of a deal. You know what I mean? It's only been like 3 days. But I mean, so I got to say, man, at the beginning of the year, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I hit one minor roadblock and the wind is already out of my sails. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man.
Who needs it, John? Who needs it?
Well, that's
especially with your razor thin profit margins.
Well, yeah, I have one or two big projects this year that I it might be a good thing because I have two big projects that I need to focus on this year, and throwing shows is fun, but does it really give you anything long term? The answer is no, except for great memories, which that's something. You know what I mean? So.
I used to have so many great memories, but I've forgotten most of them. So that's my limited value.
My other thing is, so there's a band I really like, and there's two main people in the band, and they're not getting along right now at all. And so their manager essentially said to me, well, what if you did an article about the relationship between A and B? Not romantic relationship, you know, band relationship. I said, yeah, I think that's a good – actually, no. He said, I want it to be about A and B because it's always about A, but I think it should be about A and B. I'm like, well, I can do it about the complex relationship between A and B. That'll be a really interesting article. So I interviewed B, and B and A's phone was terrible. So A said, well, can you just email me the questions? I said, sure, which is usually a bad idea, but sometimes it works out. Well, the questions were fine, but in the questions I mentioned B, and A, like – flipped out and like went crazy, you know what I mean? And so it's like, oh my god, I don't want to be dealing with this, you know what I mean?
That's gonna be awkward when Hall & Oates finally get out on tour this summer.
all your problems and frustrations are actually relevant to what this show is supposed to be about. My problems are all like my kid didn't eat dinner, my kid didn't eat breakfast, my kid didn't eat his lunch. But really, there's a theme that my kid didn't eat the thing that he's supposed to eat. And it's...
Adam,
your kid's problems are so quaint. When they're teenagers, then you'll really lose the will to live.
Adam, why? Like, let's say a kid doesn't eat. Why is that a problem? If they get hungry, say, like, 4 o'clock, give them an apple. Like, why is that a problem? That's a genuine question.
John, there's a certain amount of order that needs to happen to make, like, the day work. Which is like, yes. You get out of bed, you have to be at school at a certain time. we have fairly limited amount of time for fucking around, and you not eating or deciding not to eat is going to, you know, offset that whole leaving the house plan that impacts four other people or three other people. And then on top of that, if you go to school and you haven't eaten, then you're pretty useless being there and you're making everyone else's lives hell. So that's no good. And then you not having eaten breakfast fucks up your ability to like properly eat your, you know, lunch and snacks and stuff that you send a kid to school with. Then they come home and they're mad and angry and all fucked up because they're not, you haven't eaten properly, their sugar's all off or whatever. And then you have to deal with them in the evening and they're fucking nightmares. And because they're so ravenously hungry because they didn't eat proper breakfast or lunch or whatever it is, then they don't just want to eat dinner when it's time for you to make dinner. They want to like cruise around and snack on things before that. And it just, it is a problem. It's like, It throws off the logistics of how the whole household is supposed to operate, let alone the fact that my son is a tiny little person and he really wants to go on the bumper cars, but he can't because he's too short. And we keep trying to tell him, you are going to remain like a little short, tiny person unless you eat food. And they don't. They don't, John. They just don't. The problem is that like he's at that age where they're unable to rationalize why you're trying to get them to do something. So they latch on to whatever maneuver got them out of the situation they don't want to be in the last time. And they keep trying to apply it ad nauseum and it doesn't work. So, you know, we'll sit him down and be like, okay, we are all eating. Here is the food. And then he doesn't eat some of the food. And then he'll be like, well, can I be done? I'm like, can you be done? We're like, you can be done when the food is eaten, eat the food. Then he kind of like dicks around for a while and he's like, well, can I be done? And it's like, you haven't actually eaten anything since the last time you asked that. So no. But the problem, John, with the kids, and Tom, you can confirm this and tell me it gets worse, is that it's all about the ultimatums, and the ultimatums, they never have like a good way out. Like as smart as you think you can be about a parent about like, I'm going to attach a consequence to this, there's never a way out. So a lot of it is like, all right, well, if you're not going to eat, then we're all going to sit here. And then that doesn't work because then you're all sitting there forever because the kid was never going to eat in the first place. So then you're all sitting around and you're like getting the kids mad and you're mad and everyone else that you've roped into this scheme is mad. But then what do? You let him go? You let him go. Well, then your whole rule is clearly a sham and you've proved that chaos should reign because order is stupid. So you can't back down or the lesson is lost, but the lesson is already lost because the kid hasn't interpreted what you're trying to tell him anyways. So now just everyone is mad. And just, it's been that for like all week long. There's been real problems like work problems, but all those problems are way less important to me than some kid didn't eat his eggs, man. Let me tell you. Ah.
Well, fair enough. But listen, we got real problems, and the real problem is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced its inductees.
That's a problem that's easy to ignore, John.
We're not going to drive school. We complain about this every year, but every year it gets worse. So we're just going to touch on this briefly. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced its 2020 inductees this year are Whitney Houston, Notorious B.I.G. Let's see who else here. One second. Whitney Houston, Notorious B.I.G., Depeche Mode, The Doobie Brothers, Nine Inch Nails, and T-Rex. Bands that were nominated that did not get in include MC5, Judas Priest, Motorhead, as well as Kraftwerk, Soundgarden, Dave Matthews Band, Thin Lizzy, Pat Benatar, Rufus with Chaka Khan, and Todd Rundgren. And I gotta say, like, is it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame versus the Pop Music Hall of Fame? Even if we say it's the Pop Music Hall of Fame, then this is still a terrible choice, because if Depeche Mode is getting in before Kraftwerk, something is seriously wrong, because Kraftwerk is the band that all or nearly all of electronic music spawns from, especially Depeche Mode. And then further, the Doobie Brothers. I mean, okay, fine, people like the Doobie Brothers, they're boring, but the Doobie Brothers were like,
you love it, John.
I can't say the Doobie Brothers, but like they
don't like China Grove, come on.
They didn't like expand music, they didn't like really have any important cultural impact.
They were kind of like white boy soul rock and roll. Yeah,
they're just a band that sold a lot of records, you know, but like Thin Lizzy is way more important to do. MC5 is way more important. Thin Lizzy has sold probably, well, maybe not more records, but like there's no way to justify Depeche Mode or Doobie Brothers or even Nine Inch Nails compared to Kraftwerk.
You're missing the white. You're missing the elephant in the room. When you think rock and roll, don't you think Whitney Lenny. Houston?
Well, you see, that's the question. A,
here's the thing, John. Not only is it the Popular Music Hall of Fame, it's the politically correct Popular Music
Hall. I don't think it's a politically correct issue. I think it's a money issue. And that, like, fine. Like, if we say it's not the Rock Hall of Fame, it's the Music Hall of Fame, that's fine. There's way, way more important soul singers than or R&B singers than Whitney Houston, you know, that are not in. You know, and they should be in. The only reason for like Whitney Houston or Doobie Brothers is say, okay, we want to get as many eyes as possible, and there is no real credibility left.
It's I hate to break it to them, but Whitney Houston is not going to make it to the inauguration or whatever they call it.
Yeah, but they can have all those sappy tributes that everyone's like, oh, so beautiful. You know what I mean? That like, ugh. You know. Anyway, Adam, any comment on this or Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Total sham.
I was trying to contextualize why I don't give a shit about this.
Oh, there's so many reasons.
I think I figured it out, and it's the open-ended arbitrariness of it that I think that sours me from caring. Right. So here's the thing. There's no consequence to not getting in because you can just get in later. So it's a no stakes game, essentially. All this is it's a museum announcing for you what their exhibitions are going to be this year. That's it. And it's the equivalent of like your dad, what's the one in Chicago, the Field Museum, right?
So
if the Field Museum announced that next year the big exhibit is going to be the Ankylosaurus, people aren't going to be like, oh fuck, it should have been this Triceratops, right? Because you know what, it'll be the Triceratops at some point. Like those bones are still there. Like there's nothing to tie.
Or maybe Triceratops is such old news and they've always been around and people aren't interested anymore.
Well, but like there's nothing to tie the 2020 exhibit to Dinosaur A versus Dinosaur B. Like Dinosaur B could just be the exhibit next year. And that's sort of what's happening here. Like the eligibility bit for the Rock Hall gives it this illusion that it is something that has stakes to it, I think, because it allows bands to become eligible by virtue of being old enough. But that doesn't really mean anything. I'm comparing it to like the music prize I'm on the jury of, the Polaris Prize. So we, you know, the it's one of those prizes like the Mercury Prize, I think, in the UK, where you're nominating albums that happen that came out like in a calendar year between like May and May or something like that. So if you were nominated for 2019 and you didn't win, well, then you lost. Like you didn't win. You can't just win in 2020 for the same record. You have to release something new, right? Like you lost your chance to win. Someone beat you. But with this Rock Hall stuff, it's like, okay, yeah, so Depeche Mode gets in before Kraftwerk, and that's kind of weird from a music history standpoint. But Kraftwerk can just get in next year. It's not like Kraftwerk has burned their chance to get in. And that lack of stakes just, I don't know, I just don't give a shit because of that. Because like, yeah, at some point, MC5 will be in, Kraftwerk will be in, all these acts will be in, and when they're in, they'll have you know their exhibit that year. So essentially, what we're all doing is we're giving free press to this tourist attraction in Cleveland. Which I mean, like I don't begrudge it being there. I mean, like I went to Cleveland to go to the Rock Hall, and I went there and I enjoyed myself. So it's totally fine that thing is there. I got no problem with it. It's just that why do I care who the inductees are in a given year from a news standpoint? And I just think I don't anymore. But they've roped everyone in because it's on, you know, it's a news article on CNN about who the Rock Hall nominees are this year, and it's just like, all right, like we're all giving press to this thing, and it just doesn't matter.
I'm with you, Adam. We should stop because It really is the worst, and it's, they don't deserve it. And you know, the mainstream places are all carrying it, so screw them. Did Rush ever end up getting in? Now that Neil Peart's dead, I would think that if they're not, they're a shoo-in, right?
I think they did get in. They did. And Rush being the classiest guys ever, people said, Rush, do you care about getting in the Rock Hall of Fame? And their answer was the best answer to give. They're like, I know it means a lot to the fans, so I hope it happens. And what it says is saying, we don't need their approval. We don't really care. But if the fans want it, then we want the fans to be happy, so that's cool with us. Which I think is the exact right answer. You know,
I want the fans to be unhappy because if you're a fan of this thing, you're stupid. But I agree with Adam. It's a fun place to go walk around and look around, but it has zero legitimacy. Don't make me dig up the letter that Johnny Rotten wrote when the Sex Pistols got inducted. It is all about getting bands in there and buying, renting tables and spending money. And you know, Adam's right. It's all about money. Or you said that, John, it's about money. It's just, who cares?
Wasn't the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the one where Neil Peart actually like made fun of it at the thing? Now that I think of,
I'm not sure what happened during Rush's.
That's right. Neil Peart is up there and he just goes blah blah. Like he says this blah 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 blah. Like he's mocking the whole thing, which was cool. One last thing about the Rock Hall of Fame that I want to mention is the people that vote on this are music journalists and people in bands and stuff. Like if you look at the people voting, it's generally people that know what they're talking about. Who the hell is voting the Doobie Brothers over Motorhead or at least MC5? Like who
it's John, it's gotta be, yeah, it's gotta be that same, it's the Stonecutters that sit in the bottom of Mr. Burns' house in his castle wearing robes and doing chants and things.
Yeah,
it's
gotta be songs 100-year-old men's,
right? It's gotta be 100-year-old. I mean, their lack of vision for picking influential acts is astounding. The fact that they can't acknowledge the MC5 or can't acknowledge a Kraftwerk, but are freaking putting Whitney Houston in. I mean, give me a break. They are on the wrong side of history, my friend. The wrong side of history. Lemmy should come back from the grave and smash him over the head with his Rickenbacker.
Yeah. Violence.
Take all that, right. Rock Hall of Fame. Your $30 t-shirts and your $12 soft pretzels with cheese cup.
You're just mad about the pretzels. You don't really care about the music.
I went there. I think in 2000 or 2001. I only had one child, and he was very, very little. He rolled in the stroller all day. It was excellent. So yeah, it puts it in perspective. It was a very, very long time ago, and I did enjoy it. You know, they had a lot of Ramon stuff, leather jackets. You know, Jim Morrison's report card. I enjoyed it very much. But even then, I'm like, I enjoy this, but it's BS. You know.
So here's my exciting story about my journey to the Rock Hall. So we cross the border in Niagara Falls, New York. We start driving out that way towards we
not stop. A terrible drive for you, is it?
No, it's not too far actually. And you know what? I'd never gone down there before, so I had no idea the distances. We stopped in Erie, Pennsylvania, because Erie like juts up into that part of in between, like, what is it, New York and Ohio?
There's
right?
Not much to love about Erie.
Yeah, but if you're a Canadian, you go to Erie because you can get like cheap shoes with no tax or whatever it is, right? So we stop in Erie, we stay there for the night, we get some I don't know, bullshit at the mall. My wife tells me that she's pregnant with our first child. So Erie is like forever that for me. And then we continue on to the Rock Hall. At the Rock Hall, in Cleveland, we stay at some hotel that was like downtownish. My wife's in the hotel industry. She can get these rooms for us at places. But downtown Cleveland or wherever we were was the weirdest place to me because it was just like there were no humans. There were buildings that I assume had like banks or something in them. But there was no people, and it was almost like there was no cars on the road. There was no people, like there was no nothing. Like it was like being in like a rendered video game of a city where they forgot to put the people. It was very off putting. But we went to the Rock Hall, and then after the Rock Hall, we went and we had breakfast with one Mr. Scott Heisel and one Mr. Brian Yancey, both of classic punk news fame, because at the time, both of them were working for Alternative Press. And there was a venue in Cleveland that has like a brunch that is, but it's otherwise like a punk rock venue. And I forget what it's called, but it has a very, is a name people would recognize. And
it wasn't a real dive, was it?
It was pretty divey.
It wasn't Now That's Class.
No, let's see. Hold on.
That place is a real dive. It's great, though.
Let's see. Cleveland. Can I figure out? It wasn't Now That's like, was it? Did they do brunch at the Grog Shop? Is that a is that a place that has a restaurant? Grog Shop's
pretty well established. It's a pretty established venue.
I don't know.
It's like five. Cleveland is like 5 hours for me. It's not unheard of for me to go to a show in Cleveland, though. It's not a place that I like always know who's playing either.
Don't know, but yeah, we went there, met all the people that got paid by Alternative Press briefly. So then we went home. Anyways, that's a boring story. That's what happened.
Successfully had a child.
Yeah. All right, John, what are we doing? So this show that we're recording tonight, we are going to go over the stories that we were supposed to go over last night or last week when we just decided to not do that. So we should probably do it.
That's right. That's right. I'm back. When
you sound better. You sound better, John. You sound better.
Yeah. Honestly, like the internet in my house has been cutting out like once a week for some reason. Anyway,
whatever. We know you're at Tim Hortons, dude. You don't have to impress us by trying to pretend that you have internet at your house.
It's true. It's true. So wait, did you guys hear me talking about Fat Mike or you didn't?
What? No.
No.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
So clearly your internet's not as good as you thought it was.
No, he's just Adam. He's just like telling this whole story while Adam's, you were telling your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame story, Adam, and John was telling a completely different story. Couldn't hear you. Just.
So listen, Fat Mike, he's got a new podcast. It's called Unsafe Words with Fat Mike. And you and your partner can call in and get sex advice from Fat Mike and relationship advice from Mike. So here's the question. A, is Fat Mike anybody to give relationship advice? Because he does not have a great track record when it comes to relationships. And B, are you guys tired of hearing Fat Mike's sex stories? Because honestly, like when Fat Mike first started talking about getting spanked, it was funny. But 5 years in, I'm kind of tired of hearing about Fat Mike's getting spanked. You know what I mean?
Is he giving relationship advice or is he giving advice on like different sex kinks advice, right? And stuff like I got the impression, and he just posted a little Instagram video promoting this show that it was more focused on kind of like the I don't know, like the kink and bondage world that he seems to be like pretty publicly involved in these days. Is that what he's doing, or is he giving actual like advice on, you know, my partner and I had an argument about when we were going to have kids. Like, is he giving that kind of advice?
Well, in his the first promo video, he did suggest that he was giving out relationship advice. I think it's along the lines of Dan Savage, if the listeners know Dan Savage, who gives mostly sexual advice, but like there's relationship advice within that sexual advice.
It's like X-rated Ann Landers.
Yeah. Tom, do you need sexual advice?
Occasionally. That's what I have you guys for.
I mean, on the one hand, I would not want to say, oh, given that he is a divorcee, Fat Mike can't give relationship advice, because, you know, making that choice is a valid, you know, play in a adult's relationship.
And you may learn more from that than your marriage.
Yeah. Like I don't necessarily want to hear relationship advice from okay. For example, I wouldn't want to hear relationship advice from me. Whereas in like, I basically married the person I dated in high school and therefore don't know anything about anything. So on the one hand, you know, sure. I haven't quite put my finger on whether I'm a fan of this era of like Mike branding, where was John was saying, where he's leaned so hard into the like I don't even know how to describe it, into the kink and into like, you know, dressing in women's clothing and all the stuff that he's doing. Like I don't have a problem with any of it. It's like I'm not sure if it rings strange to me for that to be the thing that he is most public about these days, as opposed to like whatever else NoFX is ever saying about. But my perspective on that is, like, I know people who, from an industry level, have worked with Fat for a number of years, have worked with Mike for a number of years. And before any of this stuff, like, became his public persona, this was the stuff that you would hear stories about from people. Like, I've heard crazy stories from people about stuff that Mike has, like, got up to and, like, roped people into and this and that. And that's all, like, that's... There's nothing ingenuine about what he's doing. Like, this is the kind of thing that Mike's been into forever. And I think it just may be that, like, NoFX and his music persona kind of had to play catch up with it, if anything.
Adam, are you saying that you got involved in a Fat Mike sexcapade?
I'm saying that I know of friends that have been adjacent to Fat Mike. I want to say sexcapade, but they're definitely capades. Definitely capades.
Do I know that?
Yes.
Damn.
He's talking about you, John. He's talking about you.
I'd be so boring in a sexcapade. I'd be like, I'll go down. I'll go down.
No, I was going to say, I'm fine with all this. I'm fine with Mike doing whatever. But I like Mike better when he was making better records than I do when he's more of a personality. You know what I mean? I'd trade, like, a more interesting Mike back to the less interesting Mike for some more good NoFX records. But, you know.
The last NoFX record was great, Tom, or very good.
It just wasn't, John. It just wasn't. It was fine, Tom. It was fine.
It was great. It was very good. It was your best one in many years ever, if you ask me.
No. You weren't there, John. Anyways. You weren't there.
Speaking of bands that get into escapades, Green Day and Wacko. As a listener,
their new record also, John, best one in years. Just kidding. It's the worst piece of garbage I've ever heard.
As listeners know, a couple of weeks ago, Wacko had a concert in a Denny's, and there was a grand whopping just about $2,000 worth of damage, which I thought was extremely minimal and reasonable, to tell you the truth.
Can you believe that there's $2,000 worth of anything at Denny's, John? Have you been to a Denny's lately?
I realize that's a joke, but if you throw a brick through a window, that's $600 or $1,000 or $1,500. You know what I mean? So anyway, there was about $2,000 worth of damage, and the promoter was some 17-year-old kid. And so they were throwing a Kickstarter to pay back Denny's. And honestly, I thought Denny's was being pretty reasonable. Like, they were like, just pay us the $2,000. Like, they weren't even suing the kid. I mean, it's a no-win situation for Denny's, honestly, which was probably the situation Denny's is usually in. Anyway,
some manager approved this thing. Somebody, you know, somebody's head needs to roll.
Well, anyways, Green Day stepped in and they contributed to the Kickstarter, the full $2,000, and Green Day paid off the kid's thing. And to Green Day's credit, Green Day has something of a history of contributing to the local music scene. They bought an entire new sound system for 924 Gilman, despite the fact that 924 Gilman refused to let them play there. Although they did actually play there a little while ago, didn't they? But that was before that. Green Day also paid for the entire sound system and stage at 1234 Go Records, which is a record store in Oakland that has concerts much similar to Creep Records in Philadelphia, like I've talked about on the podcast. Green Day paying for the Wacko bill. Awesome, and good for them for giving back and you know, really contributing instead of just talking. Or is this really them just trying to get some hipness to rub off on them and not free advertising, but cheap advertising?
I'll give Green Day a pass on this. I mean, let's say they entirely genuinely wanted to help and didn't think about it from a PR standpoint. Well, we'd all read it as, you know, Green Day doing something nefarious anyways. It's like they can't win on this. I think, I guess they could have done it completely anonymously and kept their name out of it. But, you know, they are a band. They do have a reputation that they're supposed to upkeep. So I don't begrudge them, you know, tagging their name to their donation here. You know, this isn't church. We don't need to worry about them anonymously giving to the poor or anything like that. So whatever, I'm fine. I don't care. I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy that these bills have been paid by someone with means that came up in the punk rock scene. That's nice to hear. I somewhat feel bad in that I assumed this whole thing was some sort of PR scam on a few episodes ago, because it doesn't sound like it was.
You know, you
thought it was like a deep dive thing, like some of these other bands that are purporting to be like independent
marketing campaign.
Yeah, yeah, but that, it really doesn't appear that way.
It looks like it was actually some bands playing in a Denny's, and they got a bill. So
the thing that amazes me about this whole thing, and I find it funny actually, because I read the band statement and I'm like, man, what a bunch of dicks they're being. Like, you know, Green Day gives them this money to cover this, and they're like, yeah, it's about time you paid back the scene that you've taken so much from. I'm like, I mean, I don't know if you have that statement there. Did you guys read that?
Oh, I didn't read that being directed at Green Day.
Oh, I read it as them being total dicks about Green Day, but part of me is like, oh, that's so punk rock. This huge band comes and bails them out, and they're talking, they're backbiting them. Oh, yeah, I was
people at the show that didn't contribute money.
Oh, no, I took that as Green Day. Yeah, you owe the scene this. That's the way I took it.
They said, take a note from Green Day. It's due time that y'all start giving back to the cause.
Oh, okay.
So they're shame.
I had more respect for the band when I thought they were talking trash to the band that had just given them money.
Well, in a way, though, I mean, you're not totally wrong, because they're just talking trash to all the other bands of means that were not giving money. So like,
where's that Offspring money?
Yeah, like you know, where's AFI's chip into this, right? Like they're doing that kind of thing. Bastards. I mean, it's not
that I care about Offspring, but I know for a fact that Offspring actually has helped out various individuals anonymously a great deal. Just FYI.
Excellent. Well, they help me out anonymously. I mean, I really don't have any needs, but I could use it as more vacation.
You have wants, though. I don't know if I have needs, but man, I got lots of wants. I mean,
they give you hot sauce. You want some hot sauce?
You know what? If Dexter Holland was to show up and to give me some of his infamous hot sauce, I would not talk shit about that gesture at all. I'd be totally fine with that.
Well, here's something we can talk shit about. UMG, Universal Music Group, the biggest music group, the biggest record label, music corporation in the world, has sold a 10% stake to Chinese megacorp Tencent. Tencent is somewhat similar to Spotify in China, and it is a giant corporation. In fact, they already own a percentage of Spotify, and they also have the option to buy another 10% share, I think, within a year if they want to buy it. Boys, to me, this is extremely scary, and honestly, it belies the fact that Chinese corporations are buying tons of other corporations in North America. The reason this is extremely scary, as we recently saw with the recent sports thing, basketball players, I don't know which ones, retweeted support for Tibet. The basketball is very popular in China, and the NBA has lots of investments in China with regard to the NBA. So a couple of the basketball players retweeted support for Tibet. The Chinese government told the NBA, make them take it down or else we're going to cause problems for you. And some of the NBA players did, but some didn't. And so then China banned one of the NBA teams in China. And so what it is China and the NBA caved more or less. And so it's the Chinese government censoring American corporations, and NBA isn't even really a sense of expression. Music is a sense of expression. And to me, it's extraordinarily scary to have a Chinese corporation, which is essentially the same as the Chinese government, have its hands in a North American entity. And I think it's very scary. And what else are they in? That's really scary, if you ask me.
It's true. But, you know,
I mean, another example is all the Marvel movies and other movies cater to which the Chinese government, not the Chinese people, the Chinese government censor demands. And if you'll see a lot of North American movies, like they'll be like, oh, China's great. Or I think it was Gravity, where the Chinese government helped like rescue the astronauts. Like these movies are made to be pro-China, which in and of itself might be unethical because people can go either way. But if you read the history of Tibet and China, then, you know, in my opinion, one side doesn't look so good. You know what I mean? And then that's the side with the power.
China, China is a country that's still guilty of a tremendous amount of human rights violations, but because they're such an important trade partner to us, we routinely ignore it. That's the way our system works, you know? Like, oh, Cuba, they're so bad, they treat people bad. Meanwhile, we're buddies with Saudi Arabia, who just execute people randomly for such things as telling the truth in journalism or being gay. But, you know, we pick and choose who we deal with based on whether or not we need them or we perceive that we need them. So there's no righteousness in our end either.
And I think that's lame, but I think it's even scarier once they get their hands in American forms of communication and expression. I mean, that's our fundamental value is expression. You know,
it's true. I'm writing a concept punk album right now, anti-Chinese government. I'm afraid it's going to get shut down. I was going to put it out through BMG Music Group.
You put out through BMG, you're going to have a tough time. They've been out of business 20 years.
No.
But if you're going to put out UMG, you might
no,
have
BMG
a little
bit better. Still a huge, BMG is still a huge publisher. They just don't have the record club anymore.
True. Fair enough.
So we all agree with you, John. I hate to agree with you, but you know.
You definitely don't want the Chinese government trying to inflict pressure on cultural expression by any means. So, like, from that as a principle standpoint, yeah, I don't disagree with John there. From a practical standpoint, if you were an artist with anything to say and you've hitched your wagon to the Universal Music Group, you're giving up a lot of your autonomy to trade it for the power of a big faceless corporation in the first place. So academically, I feel
up,
for
right?
you, but on the other hand, like, hey, you took the major label dollar. You're that's your dance partner, man.
I don't think it's a question of are the bands being signed to the label getting screwed over, because you're right, they made their choice. It's a question of the American people getting screwed over that aren't part of that bargain.
I mean, as a Canadian, it's the same issue.
Northern America, Adam, UMG is part of North America too.
Yeah, I know. I was just fucking with you. It's just we find it adorable that you guys will phrase basically like the is this good for Western society as is this good for America, and the rest of us have this kind of go, yeah, we know what you mean, you assholes. All right. But yeah, no, John, I don't disagree with you. It's a problematic happening.
As a completely side note, have you guys ever looked at Greenland on the globe?
The Mercator projection or the normal one? Or the
actual
one.
A globe.
Oh, a globe.
Not a map.
Yes.
A globe.
Okay, a globe.
My wife thought it was didn't like it and threw it away.
Yeah. Okay. What about?
Someone needs to explain to me how Greenland is in Europe, because it's west of numerous American states. So I don't understand how that's Europe.
Are you sure Greenland's in Europe?
I think the reason Greenland is in Europe is because whoever was deciding what was Europe and North America was looking at a map. And as we all know, maps are highly distorted, you know, whereas if they looked at the globe, they would say, oh, that's in North America. And I don't even mean governmental power or ownership. I mean, strictly continental description.
John, have you ever heard of the islands of St. Pierre and Miquelon?
I haven't, honestly.
Oh, okay. Well, after this show is done, go look up the islands of St. Pierre and Miquelon, because it'll fuck with your head, man.
Fair enough. Well, listen, let's play a tune that'll mess with the listener's head. Who's playing the song?
I don't know if I have something to mess with listeners' heads. I'm not ready. I don't have anything. We're already like 45
right,
minutes.
I'm going to play a song real quick. This is Dexy's Midnight Runners, and we're going to talk about Dexy Midnight Runner when we get back, and then we're going to wrap it up pretty soon after that. This is Dexy Midnight Runner. No, this is the Killjoys. This is the punk band before Dexy Midnight Runner, basically the same band. Let's rock. We'll be right back.
One, two, three, four. We'll be right back.
was the Killjoys, and we just got a couple of quick things we're gonna.
Man, John, if I would have known you were going to go that direction, I would have definitely picked a Sweet Doobie Brothers song.
Well, no. See, Tom, you belie your own ignorance. And I mean, that's the second time today I've used the word belie.
Those are fighting words, John.
Because, Tom, you don't know the punk bona fides of Dexys Midnight Runners. You don't know the punk bona fides of the Killjoys. Killjoys, one of the very first English punk bands. Frontman Kevin Rowland of Dexys Midnight Runner, the band that developed into Dexys Midnight Runner, and the first album, Searching for the Young Soul Rebels, very much a punk album. So, bam. Anyways, and to further on top of that, if you don't believe me,
very much a punk song.
If you don't believe me, then you can ask World Inferno Friendship Society, big Dexys Midnight Runners fan, and even had numbers of Dexys Midnight Runners in the band. If you don't believe me, you can ask Ted Leo, well-known punk provocateur, who is now going on tour with a band called Two Rye, which, of course, is a Dexys Midnight Runner band, which also includes Adrian of Downtown Boys on the saxophone. And I got to say, boys, I mean, I like Ted Leo as a person. He seems like a nice guy. I think his records are – I'm not trying to be a dick. I think his records are pretty boring, but – but and I feel bad about that because he seemed like a nice guy and I want to like him and his stuff seems clever. It's just not enough punch in it for me. And I want to like him. And that, he even expressed frustration with that. It's not too long ago on Twitter. He got a good review from us and he was like, Punk News finally gave me a good review. And he didn't even mean that like dickishly. He meant that like he was excited that he finally got a good review from us, which made me sad, honestly. Like I want Ted Leo to be happy. He seemed like a nice guy, you know? And so he was genuinely happy that he got a nice review from us. Anyways, I'm finally able to come around and genuinely say I'm excited about something Ted Leo is doing. Ted Leo is fronting 2RIA, which includes the Agent of Downtown Boys, a Dexys Midnight Runners tribute band. They're doing an all Dexy set, and I'm going to Philadelphia. And this is going to be cool. Adam and Tom, I think I know how Tom's going to answer, but Adam, is this cool, interesting, and to throw back to the history of punk culture, or is this something dumb and stupid that we should ignore?
I am not well versed in the history of Dexys Midnight Runners, so I would not.
Midnight Runner, it means dexedrine or something like that. Midnight Runner, which means liquid LSD acid drug runner. Yeah, FYI.
I mean, okay, I don't mean like the etymology of the band's name. I mean that like their history with regards to punk rock, I'm not super super in tune with. That said, I on the other hand, from you, I'm super down with Mr. Ted Leo. I fucking helped crowdfund his last record. It's sitting there on my shelf. So yeah, Ted Leo's the man, and I am surprised if he has forgotten the golden era of Ted Leo's relationship with Punk News, because there was a time back in the day when, you know, when Leo was a just a child, just a baby, just after Chisel broke up and he started doing his solo stuff with the Pharmacists, that every time Heisel mentioned Ted Leo on Punk News, and he mentioned him at a rate that was not unlike the John Gentile Cro-Mags obsession. Well, that was a weird noise. But it was not unlike that
John's working on a new Ministry album.
That every time Scott mentioned Ted Leo, he would refer to him as the motherfucking man, Ted Leo. If you search the Punk News archives for the motherfucking man, I'm sure there's reams of articles that are in there. So anyways, I'm down with whatever Leo projects are percolating around. I would probably not have gone and saw this particular act if it came to town without the Ted Leo connection. That's my hook.
Go ahead, Tom. Hate on it.
Listen, what do I care if they do this thing? And if you want to go see it, that's great. I mean, it's not for me. I'm indifferent to it, but I'm never like, you know, do whatever you want, John. I think it's sort of silly, but you know, I like silly things too. This just isn't one of the silly things that's much up my alley. As for Ted Leo, I'm pretty indifferent in general.
Tom, so. I think you should educate yourself on Dexys Midnight Runners. First album, Searching for the Young Soul Rebels.
I've been Googling them. I'm looking at it a little, but I still, I just, I can't get past Come on, Eileen, John.
Well, that's actually a great song. That's their second record. Second record is Two Rye. Second record is an amazing rock soul album, way better than the Doobies. And it's got a little bit of a punk edge. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like Discharge, but it's got a little, that kind of punk drive to it. Kevin Rowland, the singer, is a total weirdo. And like, he's getting weirder and weirder, which is interesting. And everyone should listen to the first two Dexys Midnight Run. The third one's considered a classic in England. I think it's a little boring. It's called Until the Flicker Fades or something like that. But the first one is a punk album or a punkish album. The second one is a punk influenced album with some Northern Soul influences. And the Killjoys, which is Dexys before they were Dexys, is awesome. If you are a World Inferno fan, and specifically if you are a fan of Red Eyed Soul, you definitely will enjoy 2IA, the second Dexys album, because the influence is somewhat pronounced. One last thing we're going to talk about, and then we're going to wrap this all up. Spider Stacy and Kate O'Rourke, they're going on tour with some band from New Orleans, and they're doing an all Pogues set. And this is somewhat interesting because it's an all Pogues set without Shane McGowan, because Shane McGowan is a total mess, and I don't think he's really been able to perform for the past, I don't know, 30 years. I mean, he's done shows, but I've got a couple of live Pogues live records, and he's just, I mean, even in like the late 80s, he's annihilated, you know? Yeah. So the question is this interesting and cool, and is it cool to see that the Pogues weren't just Shane McGowan, or is this a case of Dead Kennedys 2020? You know, if Jello ain't there, what's the point, you know?
Well, it's only two of them. It's more like Black Flag 2020.
It's one of them.
Yeah, but the difference is that if everyone would put their grievances and personalities behind them, you could have a competent Dead Kennedys. You could have a competent Black Flag. Shane is fucking broken. Like, I don't know which. Like,
no, he was. They had the band without him for a while, right?
Shane McGowan, yes. The last two Pogues records without Shane McGowan. And actually, after Shane McGowan was kicked out the first time, Joe Strummer did one or two tours with the band. And there without. Is an excellent
I didn't realize without Shane McGowan. Okay.
Hell's Ditch was the last album with Shane McGowan, and Joe Strummer produced. Shane McGowan got kicked out of the band because he was too much of a mess, so they brought in Joe Strummer, and they went on tour. And actually, there's a live album that was available as a Record Store Day 12-inch record, but also you can get on CD as part of the Pogues Complete Box Set, which includes that live album on CD. And honestly, it is an excellent live album. It's Joe Strummer and the Pogues. It's exactly what you think it would sound like. It's the Pogues with Joe Strummer singing, and they do some Clash songs. And it is excellent. And everyone, if you're a Clash fan, you definitely should check it out. If you're a Pogues fan, you probably should check it out.
So I'm gonna sidetrack us real quick here for a couple minutes, because we actually talked about this on the Punk Till I Die podcast. Plug. We don't only just talk negatively about punk news and John Gentile. We also talk about some other stuff. But no, I read this article about how every year the song, The Fairy Tale of New York, generates 500,000 pounds of revenue. And I'm like,
now listen, you're right.
Where does that money go? I mean, didn't Shane McGowan have to crowdsource his teeth?
Yeah, I think he did, honestly, or something like that. Yeah.
I'm like, who's getting that money? They must have signed a bad deal or something, right? And also, I'm like, that's got to be all Europe, right? Because, I mean, there's no American radio stations playing that song. It's not like you jump in your car and like, hey, that's the new song from Breaking Benjamin. Now we're going to play a little Pogues, Fairy Tale of New York. It just doesn't. I found it very strange.
I feel like Canada is helping in that regard. Like, it's on the radio all the time up here. When
really?
At least it feels like it. Like in the rock radio stations. Like, if you're a rock radio station, what are your options?
You don't have very much for Christmas songs. Right? Yeah.
Like, you don't have a lot.
But I mean, most rock radio stations just don't even, I mean, like, the hard rock station here just doesn't play any Christmas music at all. I don't know. Whatever. I just found that fascinating. The Pogues are still a valuable entity, you know, their catalog and their great, great classic Christmas song. So anyway, Godspeed to Shane McGowan and the rest. I wish they could play properly. I would love to see them. Such a great band.
Me too, but he's so busted. I mean, if you listen to those live albums, he's like not even there. You know what I mean?
He'd be like him and HR should go on tour together, just like all the and the guy from SNFU, just like all the guys who are so out of their minds they can't even play anymore.
Yeah, it was so like revelatory for me when when I was, I've talked about this a few times pretty recently on this show, how I was like so into that, that Hellcat era, like the 2000s Hellcat era.
Yeah.
We were talking about it last time, right?
Yeah. I think just last week. Yeah.
So
we kind of were talking about Drop
Murphy's. Yeah. So Shane does a verse on Good Rats of what, Sing Loud, Sing Proud. Was that record song?
Yeah,
on?
He does.
Yep.
And I remember.
How's he sound on it?
Oh, he sounds like he's a mad. He sounds like a mushmouth. Like,
I mean, you know, I don't know. It works.
No, it works. It works. So if you approach it knowing like the Pogues and you hit that, it sounds like Shane McGowan. He sounds like rough with age and the sauce, right?
But confused with drink.
But, you know, confused with drink is a nice way to say it. But it fits kind of like the whole vibe of it. But for me, as like a, you know, 16, 17, I don't know how fuck old I was. No, probably later. I was probably older. I don't know. I didn't get
it. Well, that album came out, what, 2001? 2000?
Oh, I was older than that. Okay, anyways. Let's say like late teens, early 20s or whatever I was at the time, right? I just hadn't listened to a lot of Pogues, but I knew of the Pogues from a reputation standpoint. And I knew, of course, that like that was one of those bands that everyone was like, oh, Dropkick Murphys are just like ripping off the Pogues, right? In the same way that like before I ever listened to The Clash as a kid, everyone's like, oh, Rancid's just ripping off The Clash, right?
Oh, yes.
So like they were the band that was in my head is like the genuine band, but I hadn't actually heard them yet. And I remember listening to that song and just thinking like, holy fuck, like this guy sounds like everyone in the Dropkick Murphys sounds like a cute little baby compared to this guy. Holy Jesus. It was a shocking thing to come across as a Pogues neophyte that wasn't initiated on that yet.
It really is a tragedy that like if you listen to If I Should Fall From Grace of God, if you listen to Rum Side and The Lash, like Shane McGowan is like an amazing, amazing, amazing singer. He's got an interesting voice.
He's got a real unique, yeah, real raspy, yeah.
But he's got a real emotion to his voice, and also he's got a very interesting inflection. And honestly, by the next record, you can hear him falling down, and you know, by Hell's Ditch, he's just like what a beautiful gift, just annihilated, you know, and that brings up the question, is it his fault or are you born that way or something? You know what I mean? It's a real shame that like something so marvelous, it'd be like if Freddie Mercury destroyed himself with booze. Thankfully, Freddie Mercury didn't have that issue, you know? I don't know, man.
But his lack of, you know, sort of carefulness, you know, cost him his life. You know, he made some poor health choices. Now, granted, that was before kind of it was widely known the dangers of certain things, but
I'm just saying, Shane McGowan, I would say, has Freddie Mercury's obviously a better singer technically, but you can make the argument that Freddie Mercury and Shane McGowan.
But I'd rather listen to the Pogues.
Factors, considering all factors, considering style, uniqueness, inflection, emotion, is as good as Freddie, and he just threw it in the trash. But I mean, listen, I don't know anything about alcohol addiction. Can you blame him for that or not? I don't know. You know, it's just a real tragedy.
No, that's a question that we're certainly not going to answer right now, John. But I mean, I think there's arguments to be made for both sides.
It is really frustrating.
It is an addiction, but you know, it's one of those things. It's a disease ultimately, but it's kind of a weird disease in that it's got a more of a self-inflicted element.
There's that one joke. It's anyways, the point being is, I will say it is. I'm not going to say because I don't want to get in trouble. I will say it is really frustrating when you see like an amazing singer like Shane McGowan like smoking a cigarette or doing blow. It's like, dude, that's destroying your voice. That's all you have. Like, why are you doing that? You know, it's like, but some singers, you know, all the time, it never hurts them. But some,
but you know, we made fun of Whitney Houston earlier being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is ridiculous. But, you know, she's another one, you know, had a very nice voice, but also very wealthy. You know what I mean? Same thing. Ruined her life with drugs, right? And Shane McGowan, I don't know that he ever had the level of, you know, he didn't have the level of success that Whitney Houston did, where he was set for life, never had to worry about anything. He had a more hard scrabble type of, you know, existence. So people are insane, John. They're insane.
I'm just saying, anytime you see like a singer smoking a cigarette, it's like drugs, alcohol addiction. Well, maybe you can't help that out. Maybe you can. I don't know. But cigarettes, just stop smoking, man. You know what I mean? It's like, that's all you got, you know? So that's frustrating.
Yeah, I guarantee you, Shane McGowan's voice wouldn't have sounded like that if he didn't smoke. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think we have to.
That roughness is part of the appeal.
Here's the question, and I'm just going to pitch this out there, and we don't even have to answer it. Does Shane McGowan, does Freddie Mercury, do they have a moral duty to preserve their voice because it is so beautiful and does bring so many people joy? How about that for a question?
No, they're not responding. They don't owe anybody anything.
Interesting.
That's like saying, John, you are so fucking attractive. You have a moral duty to go to the gym and not eat that pizza.
You have a moral duty to grow you have a moral duty to grow a mustache.
If you see a child drowning and you can pull them out of the water easily, do you have a moral duty to save them? I say yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you comparing a child drowning to
stupid false equivalency
to a hot person eating pizza? All we're saying,
if you see a fat person eating pizza, do you have a moral obligation to tomahawk it out of their hand?
All I'm saying is, and it goes to a broader question, do humans owe fellow humans the duty to increase the joy and goodness in other people's lives if they can do so with a relatively minor cost to themselves?
I think
that's a point quagmire.
Well, really what we're trying to say is that you shouldn't ruin your life with drugs and alcohol. You should make it better with drugs and alcohol.
Exactly. Microdosing. That's what I'm talking about, right, Adam?
Oh, yeah.
Another shot.
All right. What are we doing? Are we done?
This is ridiculous. We're spiraling into a pose it's like late. Out of control.
Food. It's late. We're just giving bad advice. It is.
We're getting slap happy.
We're lighting up our ciggies. We're singing Fairy Tale in New York, and we're sailing on out.